Satanic International Network. You're listening to the news.
Upon decaying every foul wicked spirit in the host, the news.
20 minutes, Daniel LeVay on the news. Spread out.
On the news, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
To really happen to have a serial current
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm TC Downing on this fine Saturday morning, and we're still at the moment waiting to get our co-host Dan Dredd here on the air. So while whatever process is being gone through, I figured I'd take a minute and kind of make mention that I thought yesterday's show on branding and satanic identity was a pretty well discussed show. There were some correspondences to what me and Dan Dredd had talked about last week. As we were kind of fleshing out, the idea of branding and identity and all of that. Let me see. I'm not really quite sure where my co-host is this morning. I know he's alive and on the air, online, but I don't know if he realizes the moment or... it has often been my theory that depending on where you are within the time zone, there might be like a momentary difference. So it looks like Dan's actually hanging out in the chat room as we speak. So it shouldn't be too long before he's up on the switchboard here and we can continue the show. Today's show is going to be focused on the importance of language and how language shapes our reality. This idea is something that I wholeheartedly agree with, and I'm sure we can kind of get into that once we've got the good Dr. Dredd up on the air, too. So, Dan, we're waiting on you, bud. I'm watching the switchboard intently for you to get up on here. In the meantime, for those of you sinners that are familiar with some of the more old school or older people who have been resident on Sin, recently Manic Satanic, we did a highlight edition of her some time back. She's recently resurfaced and joined us again. So, that's an excellent thing. But now we finally got Dan on. Dan, how you doing today, man?
Well, Beast, I'm doing much better than I was last week at this time. I'll tell you that much.
Right on. I know you were awake a little earlier today, so.
Yeah, I actually got up with a little bit of time to spare today rather than leave myself precisely 5 minutes to get out of bed, have a cigarette, make a coffee, and hook my shit up. So, yeah, here I am. How's it going there, buddy?
That's good. So how's things going, man? I mean, you got the crust wiped out of your eyes this time, and everything's all good.
Fuck yeah, man. I'm ready to go.
Okay. So I kind of made a general announcement about what we would be talking about so that there wasn't the uncomfortable... trying to break the topic in, and we could just kind of begin to immediately deal with the issue of language and how it shapes our reality. Do you hold this as being an absolute value, or do you think that it's something that is loosely subjective?
Well, in my personal opinion, I think that much of our reality is built around language. I think that... our existence would be completely different. We wouldn't be able to communicate abstract ideas. We wouldn't have these things such as religions or philosophies or ideologies, or even be able to communicate things that we've seen or that we've experienced so that others might vicariously experience these same things, you know. The entire essence of learning things any other way than experiencing them is rather dependent on language. I think it's a very very important and often overlooked philosophical talking point. So I figured maybe, you know, it would make a good subject for an hour of discussion.
I actually think it's a fantastic subject. And what I have often pondered, because I myself did not exist in the period in time that language was, not in use or not yet discovered, I often wonder what shape thought took then, or if it even existed. Because as far as I can tell, I think in words. Like when I'm making up my mind about something, or I'm trying to decide something, you know, there's very much an internal dialogue going on in my head. So I'm curious as to what you might think of that idea that thought itself is dependent on language.
Well, yes and no. I think any sort of abstract thinking would be very hard, if not impossible, without language, whether that be spoken, written, or, you know, even body language to a lesser extent, although you can't really communicate that much. I mean, I could sit there, if neither one of us spoke the same language and we were from differing cultures, and there is a tree and I'm trying to, you know, explain to you what a tree is, I could point and I could grunt and I could, you know, motion towards it. But until you really understand what it is that I'm doing, you're not going to really receive any sort of meaning. You know what I mean? And even then, it's going to be very rudimentary. So when it comes to like descriptions or anything abstract or anything, you know, to give details on anything, it's really dependent on spoken, written, or otherwise complex language. So yeah, I think it's quite intrinsic to, you know, consciousness as we experience it.
Right on. I just want to make a quick point out in the chat room. Somebody has already made the mention of what about people who think in numbers and tones. I would like them to describe to me a number or a tone that does not have a word as its representative.
I'm not really watching the chat, but even mathematics is a language. You know, it's got its own syntax,
yeah,
its own grammar, its own, and you really have to understand from person to person what each concept means before you can communicate it. So really, it's just another example of the same thing. I don't really think it's an exception.
No, not at all. And then that's kind of what the point I was getting at was that there is a audio or audible indicator that attaches to some kind of a thought. The representative that I was speaking of is in itself the symbolic manifestation of whatever idea it is trying to convey. So it really kind of baffles me to try to wrap my head around the idea of thought without language, because on one level I can kind of see it happening, but that's more in like an auto mechanical sense. And I don't mean cars by that. I mean, you know, automatically and mechanically. You know, like you can walk without thinking to yourself, left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot. But I mean, I'm sure as a child trying to figure out how to do that, you have to think left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot until you've gotten it under practice and built it into a condition known as second nature.
I agree. I think that you can, you know, animals without complex language can navigate the world, and they can, you know, they can sort of do their own thing. But to really communicate anything meaningful, as in, you know, any sort of group, any sort of empathy, any sort of society, or even to communicate like a memoplex or communicate ideas, I mean, this is all dependent on language. I mean, I could walk around the corner without thinking, you know, I am going to walk around the corner. I can sort of visualize what I'm going to do and do it, but that's quite useless in describing to you where I'm going or how I got there.
Right on. I think it, in some senses, if you don't have an internal language or an internal dialogue, it's useless for you too.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
I
agree with that.
I don't necessarily mean that every single thought that crosses your mind, you know, is an exact word. But what I mean is that, you know, in the same way that a word places an image in your mind as you're going through it, and that in itself is the process of conceptualization. You know, for instance, there's this yellow key sitting here in front of me. I recognize the color yellow, and I recognize the shape of the key, and so I can then conceptualize myself reaching for that key to grab it and do whatever with it. So
sure, I guess visualizing, you know, images in your mind, it's a form of language in the sense of self-communication. So yeah, I think it falls under the same category. But before we get too far ahead of ourselves, I think it's important to define our terms. So, I mean, what is language? You know, it can be defined as a body of words or the systems for their use common to people who are of the same community or nation, or the same geographical area, or the same cultural tradition. Or it can be defined as other systematic or non-systematic means of communicating. Now, would you agree with that definition, Beast?
Yeah, I think that's a very well put definition. I would almost wonder if it is in a Wikipedia reference.
No, that's a dictionary definition, but I feel it's important to define our terms before we can really foster a fruitful discussion. You know, we can talk about language,
okay.
We might be talking about different things, so I figured, you know, I'll put something on the table as sort of like a starting point, and that's what that was.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I like having that big hunk of clay sitting there to start working with, so I would agree with that definition entirely.
Yeah, I mean, really, what is language? You have written language, you have spoken language, body language, gestures, you have another form of language, of course, is emotional expression, which can be recognized through empathy. I mean, if I see someone with a look of, you know, abject terror on their face, I'm going to know what it is they're trying to communicate, whether or not it is they're intending that, just because I can recognize that through my own empathy, right? You know, if you see someone laughing, they're communicating something to you. If you see someone, you know, even if you see someone like running away from a predator, that's communicating something to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the old coin term is body language.
Yeah, exactly. Body language. I don't know. I guess you could categorize emotional expression, you know, like facial expressions as a form of body language. So yeah, I mean that is equally as much language as written language, but written language has something separate from that, in that with written language, and this is where it gets interesting, that you can sort of express ideas that are not really limited to mapping directly to reality, and you can sort of create these idea plexes that can sort of stray from anything that is really concrete or real, and then you end up with all of these, ideologies, religions, all of these things that people take very seriously, but really it's just they sort of sit and reside inside of language. They don't really live in the real world, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. I do. I've seen a lot of people play what I call language games.
Language games.
You know, language games where they try to hone in to one particular facet of what a word means as if the other entries within the dictionary don't exist. For me, words very much have a meaning, and that meaning is very much dependent on the entire idea intertwined with the word that's being expressed. A good example of this might be, and forgive me for taking just a second to remember which way I'm going with this, peril, the word peril. What I think is very interesting about the word peril is that it's the root word of experience. And I guess what I'm getting at there is that people often use the word peril in a very negative context. But
like it's being in danger.
Yeah, like it being in danger. But the word itself has a much broader, more robust, and I would even venture to say richer contextual definition than just being in some form of imminent danger. I mean, otherwise, how could that then be the root word of the experience?
Yes, exactly. See, what you're talking about is equivocation, which is basically when you, you know, especially in our language, because there's so many words that have similar sounds or are the same word but have drastically different definitions. And this is a rhetorical ploy that many use to try to sell their ideas. You know, like you'll have words that are either ill-defined or words with more than one meaning. You know, and you can use this sort of rhetorical ploy to prop up ideas, which sort of, you know, leads to a whole another thing. But, you know, you have words like faith or fair or true with a capital T, like these, you know, or satanic even, these words that can mean drastically different people, things to different people. And when being communicated are often misinterpreted and, you know, messages can be lost.
Right on. I mean, I think it goes even maybe just a slight bit further than that, and being that it's more like they've forgotten the remainder of the word rather than it actually has a different meaning. But they've isolated so much on one aspect of the idea being the idea that's being communicated that they lose off or leave off all of the surrounding contextual information that will give you a pure understanding of what you're discussing. You know, you can often sit there and maybe make the argument, like the word spirit, this one I'm big on lately. The word spirit, most people automatically like go to this ghostly, anamorphic, manifestation, and that just, in my opinion, it falls way short of what's actually trying to be communicated when somebody uses the word spirit. I mean, if it was just this ghostly entity, then why do we use terms like in school spirit or in the spirit of Halloween or a very spirited warrior? You know, these things all kind of indicate something that, well, the only actual one-word definition that there is for it is the word that's being used. I mean, there are other words that are synonyms, which would be similar, but they're not the exact same thing.
Yeah, that's just it. That boils down to equivocation. And what that really is when people will use a word in a certain context and use it to a certain extent that other people will pick it up. Language is a living thing, you know. You can convince people that words mean different things than they do. And if you look at language, I mean, we're speaking a drastically different language than the people that were speaking English in England around the turn of the century, or even the people that live in England now. You know, language evolves and it changes. The definition of spiritual is a good example. That's now we think of spiritual, we think of this sort of, and that sort of brings us to a, you know, pejorative versus complimentary language too, where you can express the same thing to sort of put it in a negative light or put it in a positive light, depending on which words you use. You know what I mean? Like nowadays people sort of assume spiritual, especially people that aren't religious in any way, sort of put the word spiritual in a very pejorative sense, where it's sort of, you don't want to touch this word. It's a word that means superstitious, or you know, a word that means that you've sort of let go of your rational mind. Where, like you say, if you look back at the root of the actual word, it has much richer and more robust meaning than that, and it is applicable to actual real world context.
Right. I actually think that our reality is so dependent upon meaning, and language, that when we sell ourselves short in the way that I've just been describing, we actually created a warped worldview by not fully understanding the word that we have. I mean, I always think back in my mind to the old martial arts movies where they'd be sitting in front of this canvas with a paintbrush drawing out this this figure that is a word, and they would be putting so much intense focus on this figure as to absorb the idea that is actually being communicated to them. I mean, they would literally spend whatever time it took for them to actually create this figure. They would actually spend that just focused on that idea. I think that we rob our kids in that way because we say, okay, this is language, this is how it's used, and now let's move on to something like this. Instead of allowing them to actually soak in the full meaning of the words as they're being expressed.
Yes, exactly. Many people tend to sort of fixate on, you know, a definition of something, which isn't always bad, but you know, they'll fixate on a definition of something to the exclusion of all others, and in so doing, they sort of eliminate a lot of potential ideas from getting into their mind or ideas that might be considered. Look at society today. Look how man as an animal is separate from, you know, the rest of the animal kingdom. We sort of do these things that other animals don't do. And I'm of the opinion that that's purely because we have this ability to communicate on such a complex level, and it sort of separates us, you know, it sort of separates our thoughts from like I was saying before, it allows us to create these ideas that are, that no way really map to reality. You know, like we can talk about God as like a spiritual figure, but I mean, how are you going to describe that without language? I mean, imagine a world free of language, and how would you communicate any kind of abstract idea? Could religion exist? Could mathematics exist? Could you even think of abstractly at all? I mean, would consciousness as you experience it now be the same, or would it be drastically different? I think it would be drastically different.
Well, there's a couple of things that I'd actually kind of like to note. One in specific, mathematics itself is, in my eyes, maybe one of the purest forms of language, because it understands that you have to have some kind of a measurement taken, and that measurement, I guess, in my mind, is the equivalent of definition. And definition, obviously, is how we build words.
So, yes, I agree. I agree. Mathematics is the purest form of language in that, you know, basic forms of mathematics have to map directly to reality or they don't make any sense. But even with mathematics, you have things like quantum mechanics that rely on these sort of layers upon layers of abstract language that the mathematics is based on. You know, so even there, it can sort of stray off into the ether.
So this leaves us, in my mind, a very difficult task. For instance, for me to really be able to convey my idea to you and have you really experience what I'm talking about, you know, in your mind, you and I have to have developed some form of a relationship which is strong enough that you have a good enough sense of what meanings I might adhere to in the words that I am speaking. You know, it's oftentimes I've noticed when I'm communicating with somebody that I just know, just have met through text messages, they will, they'll take the context of something that I said and misunderstand it. You know, I could say something like, "I've got to go," and they could take it as, "I've got to go," or "I've got to go," or "I've got to go," you know. So it misses that whole thing.
Yeah, that's a very important point, actually. I mean, people that speak different languages tend to think with different patterns because they're using different words. Like certain Asian languages don't have, you know, a lot of the same words and conceptualizations as we do, so they sort of think in different patterns. And you can sort of look at that on a microcosm, too, where even amongst groups of friends or people that resonate with the same sorts of ideas, they will pick up on language and words used by others of their same sort of bent more quickly than they'll pick up on language used by people that are thinking drastically different, like people from different cultures or different areas or different philosophies. So, yeah, I would say that the closer you are in perspective, you know, geographically, culturally, philosophically to someone else, the more effective language is. Like, I know what you mean. Like, sometimes, you know, I'll use terms that that I would use in my own circle with people that I don't really know, like you're just joking around or whatever. Like sarcasm is a good example, where it won't always be picked up right away because they're used to a slightly different dynamic than what it is that I'm using, right? Because it's very subjective amongst like groups and factions.
Right on. I'm reminded of the first time that I ever really had to face this language problem and what happened. And I'm going to kind of tell you this backstory because I think it's important for another point about language, and that is this. I was sitting in China a couple years ago. It was about midnight, and one of the suppliers that we had been working with that day had invited me out solo to have drinks because the two of us, kind of hit it off on a personality level or whatever. So we're sitting there and we're talking back and forth, and he begins to tell me the story about his wedding night. The girl that he was marrying, him being Chinese, the girl he was marrying was from some country, and I'm not exactly sure what country it was, but it was some country out in the Philippines or somewhere over in that general vicinity, and the dialect that was actually spoken in her native language, the language lacked the ability for her to describe a lot of things, and so the story that he's telling me is that him and his wife flew out to, I think it was Las Vegas, for their honeymoon. She had never been on a plane before, so when she landed, she was excited because she had just gotten married. She had just done this flight. She goes into the room and she says, I'm going to call my mom really quick, and I'm going to tell her about my experience because I really enjoyed this. So while she's in there on the phone talking to her mother, he's, getting himself all ready for the party that's getting ready to happen once that phone hangs up. He's going to consummate this shit. And lo and behold, an hour and a half passes. And he's like going, what the fuck? We just got married and she's going to sit in there on the phone talking to her mother forever instead of keeping it brief and coming and joining me in bed. Well, he then comes to find out that the entire conversation for about 45 minutes of its duration was all based around her trying to describe in what words they did have in their language what an airport was, what an airplane was, what a pilot was. Because there were no words for these things in their culture, because their culture did not have this kind of technology. It was really difficult because she had to relate like a steel house that holds many, many people, that gives access to these metal birds which carry people through the air. I mean, this is the kind of thing that she had to describe to relay this experience to her mother. So the point that I'm getting at here is that language in itself actually is a catalyst for furthering technological advancement. The stronger language you have, the more technology you have.
Yeah, I believe it was Ludwig Wittgenstein who he said, his philosophy resonates with me very strongly, but especially this one quote. He said that the limits of my language mean the limits of my world. And if you really consider that, it's true. I mean, everything you can conceptualize, your entire world, without labels and words to describe even to yourself what these things are, that really sets the boundaries on your world. If you see something that you cannot describe, you cannot comprehend, you cannot communicate, it's really, how are you going to think about it? How are you going to communicate it? How are you going to make that part of your world?
Right. What's really funny, I'm reminded right now of the idea of a magic word. What a magic word might actually do. It is this one word spoken that creates this element in reality that was not there prior. And so in that sense, aren't all words in some ways magical? I mean, if you stripped away all those words, all those descriptors, would you not have an entirely black, desensitized existence?
Well, certainly, I guess. I mean, if you define magic as being able to change the perspective of yourself and others, as I do, language is obviously the main and most powerful tool for achieving that end. I mean, if I can communicate an idea to you and it changes your mind about something, and I've used language as a vehicle, then certainly that is a form of magic if you define it as like a, in like a materialist context.
Right on. I'm actually hitting a little bit of a bump here, Dan. My cashier needs help real quick. I don't know if you have something you could kind of ramble on for a minute, or maybe I should invite somebody to call in real quick.
Well,
3479.
We could take callers.
What's that?
We could take callers.
Yeah. 347-989-1371. Anybody want to call in and pitch in while I'm helping out my cashier real quick? It would be appreciated. Knowing that there's probably like a 10-second lag or something like that, I'll give it a few seconds here and then try to go about this. This is the only problem with my job. At this time of year, it gets more and more difficult for me to break away long enough to do something like this.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, I mean, it's only 1 month a year that's really difficult. So I'm going to guess my choice would be Sean, our wicked puppy, if he's got a cell phone next to him. I think he would be able to carry this very nicely.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things to be said about language. You could touch on, you know, the dumbing down of language, which may or may not be intentional if you look at it from a top-down perspective. I mean, take Ebonics, for instance. Ebonics was actually recognized as an official language by the Oakland School District in 1996. And here's a system of language that has been dumbed down to the point. If you think about it, you know, if the limits of your language is truly the limits of your world, and you're going to limit the language, like you're going to limit the thought pattern, you're going to be able to sort of predict with a greater degree of accuracy what someone might think or do. So if I were, like, say, in power and I wanted to control a group of people, I would want their language to be limited as much as possible. So, you know, whether or not this is just a random cultural phenomenon, or whether or not it's an intentional by our, like, Magian overlords to, like, take political correctness is another good example. You know, you have these words that are demonized, and these concepts that are demonized, whereas others, you know, are enshrined, and then these concepts attached to these demonized words are kind of shunned, and we're not supposed to think about them, you know. So anyway,
well, crisis has been averted. So thanks for the monologue. That worked out actually pretty well. I was able to deal with it in that little time that you were gone. So
oh, I could probably blather on for an hour straight, buddy. It's not a problem.
I'm kind of curious, what other limits or lack of limits do you find within language? I mean, are we really truly confined to the way in thinking, the way that we talk?
Well, that's the thing, right? You know, some people take language as like this sort of set in stone thing. But others will, you know, coin words, because you think many words are just sounds that can piggyback, like, you know, whole sets of ideas on their back. You know, when I say this one word, and like say Christianity, I say the word Christianity, and there's like an entire memeplex of ideas that are piggybacked on this one word. And when I say that, you think, like, you know, people that believe that Jesus was the Son of God, people that believe that Jesus died for your sins, a body of people that believe this. A body of people that believe in one God, you know, as many, many different ideas that are communicated by this one thing. So, and you take people like Shakespeare that sort of coined their own words, or even, you know, in our local community, you've got like, you know, say Jason King with his use of the words like master or current. These are words that he's sort of coined to piggyback his own idea sets onto. Or even with the ONA, you have words like Drek or Magian, or you know, words like, you know, there's many different examples, right? So really, I've always been of the opinion this is sort of a truism for me, that if you wield language as a razor, the mind will follow, you know, rather than vice versa.
Yeah, I can see that being a perfectly valid mindset. I often wonder, how a person can't actually realize that the more specific they make their language, the stronger the idea that they're building upon. You see it all the time in these, what Nagashiva would refer to as these crazy wisdom teachers. They're very set on developing a specific set of language. I mean, you just gave good examples of, the ONA or Jason King or Shakespeare, where these words themselves rest so strongly, they rest so strongly on the ideas that are built up behind them, that they're able to carry an entire, I hate to use this term, paradigm, but this whole development of concept through just a few basic sounds. I mean, just as an example, and it's one of my favorites, the word fuck. How many different ideas all kind of come together and dance through this word fuck. It's probably one of the most descriptive words in the English language that I can think of.
Thank you, George Carlin.
Right on. So, real quick though, it looks like we've got a caller on the air, and I believe I know who it is, but let me go ahead and bring them on real quick, see what they have to say about language. If I can. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey guys, it's Allison. How you guys doing? Hey Dan.
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Morning, Allison.
Good. I wanted to bring into the conversation, strong language. And I think it segues nicely into the piggybacking, because there's a strong word you can use that will imply a bunch of ideas that are piggybacked onto that word. Strong words like leader, follower, cult. Now you've piggybacked a whole bunch of ideas onto these particular words. And because people sometimes have finite definitions of what those words imply, it implies a whole ideology of their own. How finite is language?
As finite as the mind that wields it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's definitely finite as the mind that wields it.
Right. So, you have people using strong language when they talk or speak or and present their ideas, and then people will piggyback their own ideas onto that.
That's just it, and that is why that I prefer to use language as a razor. I like to, rather than use words abstractly, so they will fall victim to equivocation, people won't know what I mean, I prefer to really define words, and if there's an alternative definition to a word, I'll use a different word, because really language is infinite in that we can expand it as long as both parties know what is being talked about. Words like Satanism, you can use that as a blanket term, or you can use it to describe one specific thing, as just one example.
Yeah, I would agree with that, definitely. And I think other people will try to use your own language and say, but this word means this, so it should imply this idea, even if you convey that that's not what you're implying. They insist upon it. So people will try to impose their own ideas about language onto other people. Do you find that to be the case?
Exactly. Well, that comes down to sort of the dichotomy between concise and expansive language. I mean, and you can either use words specifically. But even then, it depends on your target audience, right? It all depends who you're talking to. If I go into, say, a Christian forum, and I start talking about Satanism, they're going to assume, and as should I, because I know who my audience is, that I'm talking about devil worship, and I'm talking about, falling in line with the Christian devil, right? Whereas if I go to a community such as this and I say the same sort of thing, people are going to receive that word drastically differently. So really it's a matter of perspective, of knowing your audience and sort of figuring out exactly who your target audience is before you initiate communication.
would agree.
I think it's also important that the language that you choose to use be as concise to the idea that you're trying to convey as possible. I mean, it makes no sense to, speak about Satanism and then expect that the notion of it would be held only to what Anton LaVey described. If you know what I'm saying, there's obviously more to the word Satanism than just as this idea that was hashed out, or as Dan would put it, pointed to by Anton LaVey. I dislike when people are overly vague about the wording that they use. It becomes, again, a fanciful word game. It's like when you're talking about this idea of strong language. Strong language, in my mind, sets that the word embodies the entire notion that has been described and assigned to the word itself. So it would be kind of ridiculous to not expect that the negative connotations that come with it wouldn't be there, as well as whatever positive connotations or neutral connotations are actually implied through the use of whatever strong word you're using.
Again, it comes down to your target audience. Like, say if I were to head over to the Letters to the Devil forum or address someone that was a strictly LaVeyan Satanist that allowed Anton LaVey to be the final word on Satanism to them, if I use the word Satanism and start speaking of Satanism to them, I should be aware that they're going to be, in their mind, I'm talking about everything Anton LaVey wrote and nothing further, right? Where in my mind, I'm talking about much more than that, but it's really the impetus is on me. The onus is on me to specify through language exactly what it is I'm talking about, because that word, that's just one of those sort of abstract words that can be misinterpreted and misunderstood, which is why, I like to personally use language more as a razor than a blanket. I like to really try to condense as much idea power into as few words as possible for communicative purposes.
Absolutely. So, any further commentary, Cora, on language?
That's all I pretty much had.
Okay.
Well, thanks for calling in, Cora.
Yeah, I just wanted to add my 2 cents. I thought you guys were doing a great job. All right. Nice talking to you.
Yep, all right.
Thank you. All right. So, on with language. In my mind, just a few minutes ago, I had a great idea of what direction to take this in, but then I realized, oh, wait a minute, I think we already covered the magic magic word angle. I thought that was kind of cool in itself. But what about ciphers and things like that? I mean, they're obviously forms of language, but it's a masking. Do you think they obviously serve a certain purpose in keeping things concealed to a particular point, but do you think in using those ciphers, when the decryption comes later on, that because you've used these ciphers, you may have somehow diluted the potency of the idea that was originally being conveyed?
Well, what do you mean by ciphers? I mean, are you talking about language that is sort of encoded so that only certain people will understand, or do you mean something else?
That's precisely what I mean.
Well, I think it's very useful if your intent is to communicate an idea to someone but not others. It all depends on intent, right? If I want to say something to you, and we have sort of like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of secret sort of like a set of words that we use to mean certain things that other people won't mean, like an inside joke or an inside thing. And really, I'm only talking to you and I don't want anyone else around to know what we're talking about, then that's a very useful thing. But if I'm, trying to get my message out to the general populace at large, I don't know. What exactly are you trying to get at, Beast?
What I was just trying to determine is if the process of encoding it and then later being decoded somehow loses the potency that was originally associated with the words or the language that you were using. I mean, I was more or less kind of looking at it as I kind of have a disregard for hidden language. I mean, you know, one of the things that drives me nuts about the occult world is that you have to go searching for what each person defines this particular word as so that you can understand them in the correct context.
Fair enough. Well, there again, it kind of, this is kind of hits on a couple of levels, right? Because before you can really use this kind of cipher to communicate between two people, you already have to have the context built of what this, what these things already mean. So you've really already got the language established. It all depends on the familiarity of both parties with the cipher, the decryption of for what it is exactly these encoded messages can actually be extrapolated to mean, right? Which involves a lot of prior sort of setup. Whereas, you know, if I were to try to like use cryptic language to communicate something to you, but you're not aware of what any of this means or how it's decrypted or what exactly I'm getting at, it'll just come off as gibberish.
Right. And I think that a lot of people mentally create that kind of encryption. And I'm sorry, I'm trying to move to get this phone's reception a little better. The Skype connection again today was being a bitch, so I just said fuck it and called in on the phone. But I really think that there's not much to say more on that thing, but since we do have a little bit of time left and I have one more direction that's come to mind, let's talk about the fact that some words become what is known as a buzzword, in that they have their own infection that kind of associates with them.
Well, give me an example.
Okay. Memetics.
Ah, yes.
There's an example.
It's actually a relatively recently addition to our language. Thank you. Dawkins, I believe, came up with the word meme.
Actually, I'm not sure if it was Dawkins that came up with that. I know he talked about it, but I always thought that that was actually something Darwin proposed along with the term gene.
Well, if so, I'm unaware. But
yeah, I mean, I don't know for fact either. So let's not call that the ultimate authority there. That's just what I thought it was.
But actually, that's a word that I personally find quite useful. I mean, like a memeplex, for instance, like a self-propagating set of ideas that sort of pass from person to person, you know, through people's brains, through whatever hooks they might have. Like take the ONA, for instance, and this kind of brings us back to the last thing you were talking about encrypted language. If you've never heard of ONA and you go read an ONA page, a lot of it's not going to make sense because there's a lot of words that they've coined specifically for their paradigm that, you know, that wouldn't really make sense when they talk about, like, the Magian culture, like, Drex versus Belobians, or, you know, like, all of these different things, like, Sinister Honor, like, all these things don't really make any sense until you're already familiar with the context of these things, right? So, and there,
right,
again, that is how you build a memeplex, by sort of separating and isolating ideas and sort of piggybacking them on these words and putting them together and sort of putting them out there for people to sort of assimilate and further replicate. It's kind of like a virus in that context.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm talking about in terms of buzzwords. If I was to move the focus of this lens back further and kind of spread out again, another one that comes to mind was popular in the 80s and then sometime into the 90s as well, when people would say peace upon greeting. Or exiting.
That's a good
rather.
Example.
Yeah.
Or even
it spread.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Go for it.
Okay, anyway, I was sorry to cut you off there, Beast. I was just going to say a good example is current. Really, nobody used current in the way that Jason King does before he sort of put it out there, you know, the satanic current. And this is a word that even I've adopted into my own vocabulary, you know, to sort of represent, Satanism moving forward as like an adversarial edge to the universe. And And this word has become, you know, common dialogue, common dialect amongst many, many different Satanists, right? It's a very potent sort of buzzword, as you were getting at.
Yeah, the development of buzzword is something that I find interesting. And I find this interesting because the first one that I actually pointed to, memetics, almost seems to kind of embed itself in buzzwords. That almost seems to be one method that it's delivered in. I'm not going to say it's the only method that it's delivered in, but it seems to be one method that it's for sure delivered in.
Those are the hooks, man. Those are the hooks. The buzzwords are the hooks, the ones that stick out in your mind and make the meme take root in your mind. Yeah, you've hit on a very salient point here, Beast.
So it's just curious to me as to how that works. Who decides that this word is going to be the word that I'm going to drop, and from there on out, everybody who talks about this one particular thing that I'm trying to describe will be hard-pressed not to cross over the word that I've thrown out there.
Well, it's just the thing. So, it all depends on your audience. Like, you can use very different, you know, two people can talk about the very different things with the same terminology, and it all depends on how they both understand it, you know. Like say Christians might talk about Christianity amongst themselves in a different context that we might talk about it, you know, mean different things when we say it. We sort of view the word as like a pejorative thing, or many of us do, where they would take it as like a positive thing, and the things that they would attach to it are very positive values, or the things that we would attach to it are like very negative values. So yeah, it's a very interesting thing, the way that that words can kind of sort of hook into different people in different ways depending on the context that they're delivered and the people delivering them. Like personally with my writing, I realize that my audience is very small, so I word my language in a way that sort of addresses these very specific sorts of people, whereas other people that are, you know, looking at the world in a different way or coming from a different sort of background or a different sort of philosophical core might not really take the same things away from it. They might, you know, they might misunderstand what I mean, but it's very hard to word language in such a way that everyone will understand exactly what it is that you intend, because everyone's looking at things from a different perspective, man. Everyone sort of uses language slightly differently depending on your culture or your family or your friends or your social circle or your country or many different things, right?
I mean, it's just amazing how much of reality is dependent on one simple concept like language.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people sort of ascribe consciousness as having this magical value, especially the religions of the right-hand path, where they look at us and they say, well, look how much different we are than all these other animals. But really, I would ascribe most of that to our ability to use language and sort of the sort of spider web of causes that has sort of you know, spiraled off from that. You know, our ability to look at language itself, like how it is structured. You have like proper nouns, you know, like bisino, you know, and I say bisino, I'm talking about you, you know. And you know, I know that, and you take that, you know, or TC Downey, and you take that, and that's your identity, you know, whereas animals might not have that, or even verbs like is, be, am, do, things like that. Like how are you going to communicate, you know, I am, or I will be, things like that, without, you know, having the language to express them? It's impossible, right? And these are things that are very critical to the way we think and the way we act.
Right. So in themselves, words are the most basic identifier, which kind of wraps us into what we were talking about yesterday, which yesterday we were actually kind of wrapped into what we were talking about, you and I, last Saturday. It's interesting how all of these things kind of relate with each other.
Yeah, right. I agree, man. I agree. It's a very fascinating subject, you know. It's something that doesn't really get a lot of press, so to speak, amongst thought. Like people sort of assume that, you know, consciousness precedes language, but I think language in many ways precedes consciousness.
Yeah, I would almost, and I'm saying almost, attribute the idea of language to maybe the same kind of character that I continuously try to describe when I'm describing spirit. The sentiment, the emotion, the feeling, the understanding that is attached to any particular formation of language, that kind of in itself gives, as you were saying earlier, a living, breathing thing.
Are you talking about spirit as sort of the root of what it is that you want to express? Like your spirit is like your essence, but to get this essence out, you know, you need a vehicle to communicate, you know, these things that you think and feel, right? And that's where language comes in. I wouldn't say that language fully precedes consciousness. I don't want to give the wrong impression. I mean, animals are conscious. You know, everything that lives and has a brain is conscious to some extent. But I think that much of what we sort of ascribe to being, you know, conscious, or that sort of magical element, or even as it ties into spirit, like you say, like, you know, your spirit, your essence, a lot of that sort of resides within language and wouldn't exist without the means to express these things. Would you
sure.
agree?
I do agree. And that's why I started off with that. I would almost want to say this, because the idea itself is, it's pressingly, it's pressingly connected, but I'm not sure to what extent. I mean, perhaps the divide happens at what might be ascribed to higher consciousness or symbolic mind. And maybe that's what we're discussing here. Maybe, you know, because it's obvious that all things that have a brain have consciousness. The degree of consciousness varies, obviously, by their ability to create language. For instance, I'm thinking of a dolphin right here at the moment, and they have, you know, their own very solidified language that they work within. And they seem to be a creature of higher intellect or a higher level of consciousness.
Well, their brains are comparable to ours. And that's the thing, though. We're sort of stuck in like a humanocentric sort of worldview, because obviously we're humans. So I don't really think that we could ever fully understand the language, because we already realize that dolphins and whales and even elephants have very complex language. But trying to understand them, you know, with our brains being wired the way they are, you know, it's very alien to us, you know. But I agree, though. I don't think we are the only species on Earth to utilize language, but I don't know if any other species on Earth utilizes it to the degree that we do. But then again, we have no way of knowing. I mean, dolphins make a very wide variety of sounds and noises, and you know, almost to the extent as human language. But to date, nobody's really been able to decipher it, and I don't know that anyone ever will.
Right, and we've never discovered any deep water city or anything that they've developed. So, you know, I guess they haven't quite reached the same capacities we have, one way or the other. I mean, but then again, maybe in the water, it's not necessary to have the same kinds of things that we need to have. You know, you don't really need shelter from storms underwater, you know?
Yeah, that's just it, too. And we sort of, like I say, sort of put things in a humanocentric context, not to change the subject away from language, but it's a very interesting thing where, you know, to a dolphin, you know, to their way of thinking, you know, building and, you know, doing the massive amounts of damage that our sort of human lifestyle does to them might be utterly ridiculous, as utterly ridiculous as swimming around in the ocean naked, you know, for our entire lifespan, that might seem to us.
Right on. Well, Dan, we're at the finish line, bro. So any final thoughts?
I really enjoyed today's show, Beast, and I look forward to next week. I hope everyone listening got something out of this. I hope I made at least a couple of people think about something. And, as always, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, man.
Right on. We'll catch everybody next week.
Thank you for listening to
to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Special thanks to Dad, the Rocky DeRoma, for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?